This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury, and this is Open for Business. We're going to talk a little bit today about bazaars and how arts bazaars used to be one of those common weekend occurrences prior to the pandemic. And it came to a bit of a sudden halt when the MCO was implemented last year. A lot of people would know that these are the places that you go to discover high-quality products from homegrown brands, sometimes handmade and often one of a kind. I'm going to be speaking with Brian Lowe. He is the man behind the social e-commerce platform for artisans and micro brands, Poptron. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Now, I got your pitch fairly recently, and as I've just stated, you know, things came to a sudden halt during the MCO. Some things came to a halt, some things got started. You got started with Poptron. How did all of this come around? What happened? And tell me the kind of birth of Poptron. How did it get started?
Oh, well, it was a marry of two things. I was always very interested in arts and culture. I used to run an arts intermediary in that space for about 8 years. It was based in Publica, so every lunchtime I used to take a stroll at the bazaars. They're very good bazaars in Publica. While doing that, I've got to know the founders of these brands who used to make these things and have conversations with them about, you know, it doesn't really occur to you that they actually design, make, fulfill, pack, ship the whole product until you have a conversation with them. That really caught my attention. So when the pandemic started, I had this crazy idea of swinging the whole company from an arts and culture intermediary into one that's completely focused in helping creative entrepreneurs. So effectively, I had shut down my arts and culture intermediary company and started a completely new company all in the span of the MCO, which is not something I would advise people to do.
I was going to say, which is very brave or very stupid.
Exactly. I wouldn't advise people to do that, but I was very sure of it. I had spoken to the team and they were also feeling like this is the right time to do it. So I went headlong into it, and today we are where we are because we really believed in the whole helping to foster this community, not only in Malaysia, but also regionally. That all really started from my appreciation of arts and culture, to be frank.
And where did that kind of that passion and that appreciation from arts and culture start, do you think?
What's interesting for me in the area of arts is that, you know, art is just pure creativity and imagination. What you can imagine and you can put together in some medium or form, you can then put it for display or for someone to experience. And whatever you think is going into that piece may not always translate in the way that someone experiences it. But I've always appreciated the purity of it and the bravery of artists. Artists are not generally driven by monetary gain. They're just very pure to art form and wanting to excel in what they do. They would rather somebody think about the whole P&L thing if possible. But I really have always appreciated that. What I found in creative entrepreneurs is that that DNA existed in them. They were very proud of their products. They designed it. They, in some cases, make it. They're very proud of the branding, the packaging, the communication, the photography, the whole supply chain. They're very proud about their products. I connected with that side. And I found that form of creative entrepreneurship is something that has always fueled me. I've always been interested in creativity, always been also interested in technology. Couldn't find, well, not an excuse, but a real problem to help solve until that happened when I engaged with all of these brands. So the more I engaged with them, the more I felt compelled to do something about it because I knew I had the right mix of both. And I was convinced I could do it. Although when I told my team, they were probably thinking I was crazy. But it was very clear to me. So I was like, I think we have something here. But yeah, I just kept hacking at that problem.
I mean, there is quite a lot to be said about the cliche of the struggling artist, I think. You know, is that, as you alluded to a few moments ago, the pride that a lot of these artists put into the stuff that they create and the way in which they do it often kind of supersedes the need to want to sell the things that they create. And I think often it takes a third party to come in and say to them, I like this piece. I'm sure other people would like this piece. Let me help you sell it in a way that more people are becoming familiar with, yep. i.e. digitalization and going online. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I would say that's fair. Some artists generally prefer to just stick to their lane and not be commercialized. They actually frown upon it. And I'm speaking purely about arts, with visual arts, performing arts, literature maybe in some respect. They prefer for it to be as pure as possible and not tainted by, you know, the whole ecosystem of commercialization. But some of them are see the need for it because they realize, you know, to sustain themselves doing what they love, there needs to be some angle of surviving to do that, which involves, you know, commercializing their art form. I've seen many, many forms of that. Some people who are completely commercial, some people who are purely arts for art's sake, and some who do a multitude of or varying degrees of a hybrid model of, you know, doing some form of commercials to sustain pure art. So it was very interesting for me to observe all of that in the 8 years. But when I spoke to these entrepreneurs at these bazaars, and that I connected with their sense of passion, I saw that again. So what I saw in the artists, I saw in them, and that of course drawn me to it, and that sense of pride of what they do, and wishing, you know, they could reach a much larger audience. I picked up this shoe once in 2019, and this was really the point that started this whole thing for me. I think it was 2018, end of 2018. It was a solidly made tan brogue shoe for men's. It was not cheap. It was 399 ringgit. And I picked it up. It felt really good in my hands. Yeah. I asked him how much. He said 399. And I was like, this is really good. Where does it come from? He said, oh, I made this. And I stunned for myself. I was like, you made this? He's like, yeah, I made this. I was like, huh? And it was like, wow, this feels really good. And I was convinced that I want to buy that shoe immediately. But right. He didn't have a POS machine and I didn't have 399 ringgit with me in cash. So I said, okay, I'll look for you. Are you online? He said, yeah, I'm online. I'm on Instagram. So I said, okay, fine. I'll look for you. I searched for his brand. I found it. I didn't click the follow button. So the next day I decided, okay, let's go and look for that brand. And I couldn't remember for the life of me what was the name of that brand. And I couldn't find that brand at all for 3 months. And you must know the feeling of not being able to recall something for 3 months. Yes. It hounded me incessantly.
Yeah.
That's where I realized a lot of these brands use social media as a way to attract and acquire customers. But social media is not a search engine. It's a discovery platform. Therefore, if you entered tan brogue shoe, you won't find this brand. You will find generics. I thought that was an interesting problem. And it occurred to me 2 or 3 times more after that. And I thought, okay, this is a problem. So if great brands like these cannot be found by more people, I think I know what to do. So that pretty much kickstarted the whole PopTron thing for me out of frustration.
Out of frustration.
Yeah, not being able to find them.
It's a good way of getting things started because that way at least you know you're motivated. You know, how do I... It's a problem to solve.
Yeah.
Right? Let's speak a little bit about problem because getting PopTron kind of off the ground and moving hasn't been without issues, right? You approached a whole bunch of 42 investors, I believe, you approached, and none of them locally... decided to take you on board. Why do you think that is?
This happened right in the middle of the pandemic. So I locked myself in I was already locked in anyway, so that was good. So I had 3 weeks to develop a full P&L and then a business plan, and I just started talking to my network. And the good news is that because it's a lockdown that's happening around the world, everybody was at home, so they had time to spare. So they took a 15-minute call with me. I did my thing.
You had a captive audience.
I had a captive, literally, audience. Yeah. But they were really nice because it was a pandemic and everyone was kind of unsure where it was going to go. And at that time, the swing towards e-commerce was not apparent yet. It was happening, but it was just not translating in terms of numbers. So a lot of the early investors were not sure. And it wasn't that they didn't believe in it. They thought, okay, it's an interesting problem, but we're not ready to do this yet. But they were kind enough to refer me to somebody else. That was the good part. It's like, maybe you can talk to this person. He might be interested. So I just continued talking to as many people as I can. I got the rejections, but they were all very kind and very nice. And along came this one company that said yes, and I was surprised. At 42, I was thinking, okay, maybe this is not a good idea. I don't know. But then somebody said yes, and I thought maybe it's just yes, we should talk more. But then that more translated into a term sheet, and then that went straight into a shareholding agreement, and it became real. And what was once a concept is now, you know, you have to execute. So very quickly, I had to shift my mind from concept to let's go and do this together.
Okay, hold that thought. You can tell me more about that after we take this break.
Sure.
We're going to take a short break here on Open for Business, where I am speaking with Brian Lowe, the man behind the social e-commerce platform for artisans and microbrands, Poptron. We'll be back after these messages on Open for Business here on Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Brave, free Malaysians. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Open for Business here on Enterprise. I'm speaking with Brian Lowe, the man behind the social e-commerce platform for artisans and micro brands, Poptron. Brian had a little bit of a problem a few years ago. He found a pair of shoes, and those pair of shoes he couldn't buy at the time he needed to. Decided to go online and try and find them. Couldn't find them. Found out that there was a little problem that he intended to solve. Poptron was born. He went out and spoke to a whole bunch of investors who said no before somebody finally came forward and said yes. Brian, welcome back. Tell me more a little bit about this investor that suddenly turned around. And like all of a sudden, as you mentioned just before the break, you've gone from, I have this great idea, to all of a sudden, I now have to implement this idea. You know, how difficult was that switch?
It was not easy, I must say. The moment you proceed forward from a term sheet, the due diligence was really difficult. Because it was a NASDAQ-listed company, that made things a whole lot more difficult, because the compliance spreadsheet that they had emailed to me, I pretty much took a few glances at it and just went straight to bed thinking, this is not going to happen. it's tough. But, you know, the next day I decided to just go ahead and do it as much as I can. I think what made it work for me is because they were a corporate investor, not so much a VC. So the mindset is slightly more different. They already had a business that they ran successfully. They're NASDAQ listed. So therefore, it's okay to take a little bit of risk. If it doesn't work out, it's fine. I think that was the first thing that was different. And the second thing that was different was that I had worked on the concept of Poptron for about a year before that. So it wasn't like just at the spur of a moment. I had the full projection at hand. I had a working minimum viable product online that they could see, they could dig in, they could try. It wasn't working well, but it was working. So I think the combination of that really gave them some confidence. And I think they just needed to know that, you know, I had the experience to do it, which in all frankness, I did not. I was very transparent with them. But they knew I was very passionate about this. And I had been in the whole creative entrepreneurship circle. And I love tech because of the way I presented. And during the due diligence process, they did ask me about, you know, a lot of tech questions. And I was able to articulate and satisfy the questions. So they knew that I had put a lot of thought into it. And I wasn't a conceptual thinker and not being able to do it. I think that made a lot of difference. So, yeah, I must say it must have been also a really big risk for them to take a chance on somebody they have never met until today in person. So kudos to them. I think they made the right bet and we're growing.
Yeah. I think I'm starting to hear a lot more stories like this, though, not just of, you know, investors who are like helping companies get off the ground with people they've not met. I'm speaking to companies that have started with partners that have not met, and they're on different sides of the world in different time zones. And it's really interesting to see how tech is helping to bring, you know, people and ideas together finally. Stuff that we've known has been possible, but we really haven't taken advantage of the tech really properly up until now.
That's true.
Okay, so earlier on you spoke about how you did it at the height of the pandemic. If I were to ask you the challenges that you've faced so far, the bigger challenges, you know, what do you think they were and how did you deal with them?
I think the bigger challenges for us in putting together this community of brands and people that love their products is not really rocket science. If you look at any of the other e-commerce marketplaces, they still struggle from the same problems. Generally, it's local purchasing and deliveries are fine, but when you go into cross-border transactions and cross-border logistics, it gets a little bit tricky. As witnessed by the pandemic, everything gets halted because there's no shipments and prices go up and down and delivery becomes a little bit erratic. So a lot of people take it for granted, but actually it's a really difficult thing to do. So I must commend those who are in the logistics business. It's tough for them. They had to deal with a whole spike and everyone accepted the same SLA. So it was really tough for them. But I think logistics and cross-border is the key for a lot of the brands that are on our platform, because they're locked in by the social media algorithms in a way that they can only generally market to their local community. So to get a person to buy their product from Indonesia or Thailand, you have to pay firstly to get that reach to social media. And then the cross-border charges are really, really high. See, the problem is that when you buy from a lot of the bigger platforms, the shipping fee is low because they have aggregated a huge amount of volume to bring that prices low. Mm-hmm. Micro brands, on the other hand, are singular individual brands. So they basically then have to fulfill their product at rack rate. So I can give you a simple example. A product like a toothpaste that's made locally in Malaysia by a really great brand called Mandi Product cost 19 ringgit. It's not expensive. It's premium, yes, but it's not expensive. But if you were to ship that product, which is only 100 grams, to Thailand, it will cost the buyer 42 ringgit.
Right.
So it's just over twice. So logistics is the key problem. And how we solve that is basically we aggregate the micro brands into our platform and we drive their cost of doing business down in three key areas: just customer acquisition, cross-border payments, and cross-border logistics. And that's how we do it. So not really rocket science. It's just that we're targeting a very specific audience and using a very specific set of brands to merge and bridge this connection between the both of them. It's just like a bazaar setup. The only difference is now you can buy from another person who is a micro brand out of Indonesia or Singapore. Somebody you would never, ever come across on social media unless they pay to reach you, pretty much.
Where do you, I mean, bazaars are wonderful things, you know, and I find myself, whenever there is one, I'm always wandering around. I mean, you know, it's something I love. The very fact that I can now do it online and see, you know, real artisanal stuff and stuff that is, you know, handmade and people have really spent time doing it. How do you see Poptron growing over the next few years? I mean, because this sounds like something that a lot of local brands will really want to get in on. I mean, it's okay, we have the other e-commerce platforms for, I don't want to say generic things, yeah, but generic things, you know, and a platform like this is very specialized.
Yes.
How do you see it and what do you see happening over the next couple of years?
I think the easiest way we distinct ourselves from them is that Poptron is a boutique and the other e-commerce platforms are generally a hypermarket. They both serve the right purpose. So if you need things cheap, fast, at the lowest price, and you don't really care about who the seller is, then a hypermarket model works best. But if you want to find something unique from a particular maker that you don't find in any other marketplaces, then Poptron works best. It's like a boutique. It's curated, right? And I see this growing, you know, really infinitely to a point that it's now looking like I think the last figure we got, it was crossing $2 billion per annum in just Asia.
Yeah.
There are a lot of products that are made by micro brands now coming online as a result of the pandemic. So yeah, my research that went into my pitch deck was almost immediately obsolete when I did it. And they are now increasingly find that although you have the tools available, you know, Instagram, Shopify, and then integrating another payment platform and maybe the delivery, it's not easy because acquisition costs money, fulfillment costs money. And if you're not riding on a platform that drives those costs down for you, you will be overpaying and it doesn't make economies of scale. It becomes unsustainable. So then you're just locked into selling it to your own community, which means you're back into the whole local situation.
Which kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah. So where we're different is while we're onboarding a lot of Malaysian and Singaporean brands, my mission is really to bring down these walls between the countries and to enable the economies of micro brands to go regional. And that's really our mission.
I have one final question for you, and it's about onboarding, I guess. How is it happening nowadays? Are you kind of actively searching for brands and craftspeople to come on board your platform, or are they now actively seeking you out, or is it a combination of the two?
Well, initially I had seeked them out. I was fortunate enough to be able to speak to 100 brands personally, and that's really gotten me a lot of the insights towards not only what they love about running their own brand, but also their pain points, which is why we're very clear about the problem that we're trying to solve.
Yeah.
Initially, it was more us approaching a lot of brands and they were very skeptical. But now it's the reverse. I would say it's about 50-50. We still do approach and curate, and we do get a lot of inquiries on how to sell on Poptron. And I think that will continue to shift towards the direction of people asking us as we open up Singapore, Indonesia and Philippines this year. I think it's going to be exciting. The team has a big challenge ahead of them of trying to onboard the right brands and as many of them as possible, because we want to help as many brands sustain doing what they love, just like how we used to do in the arts, helping a lot of artists sustain doing what they love. It's the same modus, just in a completely different context.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for your time today, Brian.
My pleasure. Thanks, Richard.
I've been speaking with Brian Lowe, the founder of Poptron. They were established in 2019 with a mission of fostering a community that loves and appreciates emerging brands, beautiful products, and the wonderful creators behind them by connecting lifestyle micro brands and content to a like-minded global audience. They empower passionate brands to make a difference every day with their amazing products. They're headquartered in KL, and for more information, you can head over to www.poptron.co. If you missed any part of this show, you can download the podcast a little bit later on. You can use the BFM app, which is available in the Apple App Store or Google Play. My name is Rich Bradbury for Open for Business here on Enterprise on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.